welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're here Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine station, and then we have the podcasts that are available via SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spotify, and Blueberry, Player FM, and many, many other locations. We certainly hope that you will avail yourselves of these podcasts, and you better go to the podcast because, hey, there's more than just the 50 minutes that we speak with our guests, have a conversation on this program. That's all we get on the radio. And we only get so much time, and then we got to get off to make room for somebody else. So go to the podcast. You get the whole thing. Could be 60, 70, could be 80 minutes. Maybe we go on for hours. You know, you don't know unless you go to the podcast, because there could be some good information there for you that could really help you out. And you know what? If this is the first time you've listened to the program, you want to find out more, go to not just the podcast, but go to our missions page at richarddugan.com, read what we're about, and if what we're doing, what our guests are talking about resonates with you, you like what they say, what we're talking about, and you'd like to support us financially, we have a PayPal and Patreon account, and we encourage you to do that if you can. We thank those who have supported, and we thank those who are going to support. Every little bit helps to defray the costs of the radio broadcast time, as well as the podcasting outlet, too. So we encourage you to do that. And then when you're listening to the podcast on SoundCloud, you see that little grocery cart. We have nothing to sell you. We are guiding you to our guest's website so you can continue your evolutionary process. We have a returning guest to our program, Dr. Dravon James, and she basically is the founder of Everyday Peace, and the goal of Everyday Peace is to educate, empower, and inspire others to build the life of their dreams. That sounds kind of familiar to me, like, you know, new paradigms for a new world and giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true? A little bit. Also an author and a speaker, she teaches others how to utilize everything that shows up in their lives. That's right. The good, the bad, the light and the dark, if you will, and everything in between. Those shades of gray, could be 50, could be 75, could be 100. I don't know. And then basically use those as stepping stones on the path to building the life of their dreams. And I want to welcome Dr. Dravon James to our program. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I thought about this long and hard as I was coming into the studio for this interview. And one of the aspects we're going to talk about today is going to have to do with relationships on basically all levels. But we're also going to talk about stressors in our world as well, because I know that's an area that you talk about a great deal. You also have a book out, too, which if the title is correct, Freedom is Your Birthright. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about the last time you were on the program. But I thought about this when I was thinking about the program, and I thought, I was listening to, and our listeners know that I lost a dear friend back in March of 2019, a very good friend I've known for 40 years, and she was a very involved in the entertainment industry, very involved in broadcasting in Arizona and Phoenix, as well as in Hollywood, and hundreds of interviews she did, and they were all on cassette. Well, she, in her will, she gave them to me. And I'm in the process of transferring them to the computer. Well, I was listening to one where she was being interviewed, and she was talking about a process that she refers to as personology. But she was talking about relationships and listening and so forth. And this is what spawned this introduction. I'm going to give you two phrases three different ways. Who are you, and what are you doing here? Who are you, and what are you doing here? Who are you, and what are you doing here? Now, those three different approaches to those two phrases, as far as somebody coming into your space, so to speak, depending upon how you put that out there, is going to determine an awful lot on how the person responds, right?
It is.
And can make a big difference in the way in which that conversation progresses. Is that sort of where we are, at least today? It's nothing new. I mean, we've been dealing with this kind of stuff for, well, as long as man's been on the planet. But because we're here in the 21st century, we're trying to get a handle on community, trying to get a handle on family and being able to relate with one another. I mean, in the last few years, not only have we seen couples break up, we've seen families split apart. Can you help us in this particular scenario, and then we'll move on to some other areas, but in this particular scenario, how can I, as the person who receives one of these three introductions, so to speak, what's the best way for me, who really does not like drama and confrontation, to bring that to a level where the two of us can then communicate? And I mean really communicate, listen to each other, and have a wonderful, meaningful conversation.
So it's all about perception. And here we go with this age-old truth, is that we want the world to see us the way we are really inside. So if we make a mishap, I want you to make allowances for maybe my bad day or my, you know, what's going on in my life. And we have sometimes, many times, the inability to do that with other people because we're really wrapped up in what's going on in our life and what our needs are. So all of this takes us to say, I am, and this is going to sound really bizarre, but just stay with me for a second. This individual is sick. That's it. They're not feeling well. And when we approach it that way, we back up a little bit. Because who amongst us would be, if we had a dear friend who was really crabby, or our spouse was really crabby that day, but we know that they're really, really ill, something's going on, you know, maybe they have the flu, or maybe it's worse than that. Maybe they just got a horrible diagnosis from the doctor, and they're just not feeling well, physically not feeling well, because we can all relate to this. We've all not felt well physically at some point in our life. Some point in our life, even though we persist, we go to work, we do all the things, but we're just not feeling well. So, and this is a game that I play with myself when I find myself getting a little bit hot under the collar. You know, we have that age-old adage, be slow to anger and quick to forgive. And so to that, I always add, I'm going to give you a backstory because I don't know your backstory. And when you're really, really rude or just a little bit testy and I find it offensive, I'm going to say you have a migraine. I'm going to give you that latitude so it forces me to come back in a more gentle way. Now, I may still correct the behavior, but it's in a gentle way because now I see you as a person in need, a person in need. It changes the whole, because when we meet somebody automatically, we think this is personal against me. You did that because there's something lacking in me. The whole focus is on us. You behave that way because it's about me. Really, the truth could be they behave that way because they don't handle stress well, because something horrific just happened in their life. A number of other reasons, which may have nothing to do with you. So when I first approach it, give that person that latitude. And my go-to all the time is a migraine, because I'm not a person who gets headaches. Thank goodness. But when I do on occasion get one, it's difficult to function. So I said, this is how bad a headache feels. My goodness, if you're dealing with somebody who has a migraine and they're short and snappy, I get it. So I do that right away. And then from there, we can do some correction. We can do, I can approach everything with love instead of meeting hostility with hostility. You know, hostility plus hostility equals hostility.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I find it interesting, too, that people don't seem to realize that. I mean, violence begets violence, and why do we keep perpetuating that same mistake? Now, what I'm going to share with you now, I've shared on this program before. I'll keep it brief because I'd like your perceptions. We have a divide in this country, and it is a political divide, but I'm not going to get political here. When our president first announced in June of 2015 his candidacy, and the way that he announced it, the first thought that went through my mind was, and this was the way I phrased it, I don't want a bully for president. I didn't care what his politics were. It was his personality. I just didn't care for it, you know. And of course, I ignored it for a year, almost a year. It was September of 2016. I got sucked into the whole thing. It took me 6 months, as I say, to get unsucked. And then I had to go through sort of my own rehabilitation process, where the first phase was, teacher, thank you for teaching me how I don't want to behave. The second phase was, I forgive you, but more importantly, I forgive me for getting drawn into this whole trauma. And the third phase that I'm at right now, which is this whole aspect of perception as well, is now putting the question out when I hear certain things come from this gentleman. My question goes out to him with heartfelt compassion. I'm serious about that. He's a human being. He lives on this planet. He has as much right to live and do the things he's doing as I do. And people cannot like what I do, too, and feel the same way. But the question that comes out with gentleness and compassion and genuine human compassion for him, what are you so afraid of that's causing you to lash out like this? Can we sit down and talk about it? Can we go through an encounter program that will at least, at the very least, will show you? You don't have to change a thing, but could we at least show you how whatever fears are going on inside of you are really stirring a pot that really doesn't need to be stirred, and a pot that we really don't need? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I do. And I love, I got to just tell you, that last question, I love all of them because they're talking about forgiveness, the first two. But that last one, I want to come to that one because that is the key to this whole program that you just, when you started off, this fear factor. Mm-hmm. But this forgiveness is so very important, mm-hmm. and it's really key that you start off with forgiving yourself. So often, we skip over that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't honor ourselves first, right? So we keep ourselves in this place of shame, blame, and condemnation because, you know, if I were a better person, then maybe I wouldn't have done that. And or if I had more, you know, patience, then maybe I wouldn't have done that. If I were more intelligent, then maybe I would, you know, the ifs go on and on and on. But here is the thing. When we forgive ourselves, when we extend that humanness to ourselves, you say, you know what, I'm not perfect. I missed the mark on this one. And I'll miss the mark again, but we take a moment, we acknowledge that, and then we quickly forgive ourselves. Quickly forgive ourselves. That energy right there, because if we can't forgive ourselves, it makes it very difficult for us to genuinely forgive anybody else. Because when we realize, and here is the thing, when we realize how often throughout the day we need to forgive ourselves, we become humble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, because that's self-reflection, right? We're looking, becoming aware of ourselves. And you see, and I'll just use me, Trayvon. I mean, it's only been, you've only been up 30 minutes. You got to be kidding me. But this happens. And then you say, okay, so no shame, because I don't know if you heard me say this acronym for shame, but I absolutely love it. I picked it up somewhere. Shame meaning should have already mastered everything. Baloney. None of us have mastered anything. We're all in a perpetual state of learning. So, of course, we're going to do things that need to be forgiven. So we forgive ourselves first. And that makes it much, much easier for us to forgive other people. Because I guarantee you, someone has interacted with me who's walked away feeling less than great. And I may not even have meant for that to happen. But I got things going on in my mind, and I accept the change. I'm like, okay, thank you, and move on. And it's not, no eye contact or, you know, what have you. We move through our day like robots sometimes, thinking we're self-absorbed in what's going on in our life. And some of those things are really big and really heavy, and we may act in a way that we would not want to be acted on. We don't want another person to act that way towards us. So that forgiveness is key. Now I want to talk about your question, which is so key to everything. What are you so afraid of? And I like to phrase that like this, making a statement. You are safe. Because I don't know what happened in your past. I don't know what happened 5 minutes ago. Because truly, when we meet anyone, they come with a whole package of pain. a whole package of pain, things that they just overlooked, things that they're dragging with them from centuries ago, past hurts. And it really boils down to most people feel as though they're in a us against them type of world. You know, mm-hmm. I think Einstein once says it, you have to decide which type of world you live in. Do you live in a friendly or hostile world? Most of us have decided that we live in a hostile world, and we use the media and the movies and our entertainment source to validate that, you know, in the news, and we say, this is a hostile world. And so because of that, I'm not safe. And because of that, I need to behave this way. And it plays out. So when we get into interactions, even those that, you know, we don't love everything about everybody, not even ourselves, you know, we see some things that need to be improved. But when we approach it saying, you are safe, it's the same thing as saying, what are you afraid of? But maybe you can't even face that. Maybe you can't go back there and grab those past fears, which if you don't, are going to keep creeping up in every relationship that you have. Trust and believe that's going to happen. But maybe right now, today, you can't do it. It may be enough for you to know, either with the direct words, you're safe here, or with a smile, a warm embrace, just tenderness in the interaction, for you to let go your guard a little bit and relax a little bit. And guess what? You do it one day. My son says, you know, different things happen. He goes, Mommy, relax. You gotta tell people the same thing over and over again. And I'm like, well, yeah, I tell you the same thing over and over again, too. That's just how life is. We're sometimes slow to learn. We learn by repetition. So it can't just be one encounter with me where you feel, where I make you feel safe, especially if you're coming to me with a bag full of fear. Every encounter, again and again, like starting over, that movie, 50 Dates, was always the first date over and over again. Every encounter, I got to make you feel safe. I got to start from there before we can really have a true, authentic communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I will tell you that prior to going through those three phases, you know, I would get so agitated sometimes, and then I would get into conversations with people, and unfortunately, it was usually with people who agreed with me, and I say that because all that does is reinforce the attitude and that energy. Not to say that if I was talking with people from the other side, so to speak, that it would be any different, because then we'd get into a big old argument over the whole thing. But I actually had a conversation with a woman just the other day, and we touched upon it briefly. I think we both kind of acknowledged, hey, we are where we are, and where we are for each other, for ourselves, is okay. Let's move on to, you know, other things that we wanted to talk about. And we did. And was fine, and I'm looking forward to working with this gal and so forth. But it's interesting how we do get drawn into these things. And then there's another aspect of it, too. You talk about perception. You talk about perception from the standpoint, guess what it is that we're getting? The only information we're getting is through certain portals, through certain filters. We're not really getting the whole story. I mean, it's like if your life was broken up into sound bites, okay, especially of the trauma and the drama, and none of the happiness and joy that you experience, because that doesn't sell. Well, it was explained to me this way. You ever been to Disneyland, Dr. Dravon?
Disney World, yes.
Disney World, Disneyland, yeah, any of the amusement centers. So I'm going to ask you this question. How was it?
Oh, I loved it.
Okay, you're
I
lying.
Absolutely loved it.
You're lying. No. And here's the reason why. Because there had to have been, even if they were short-lived, moments of stress and struggle, even during the periods of time when you loved it. Okay, because We're living in a dualistic world, and nothing ever goes perfectly. And as I said, they could have been very brief little things, like you couldn't get a door open, or they kept...
Or the long lines.
Or the long lines, or the food that was really not that good for you, but it's all you could get in the park, or the crowds were just unbelievably large, and or sadly... What happened in Disneyland just recently, a fight breaks out in the middle of, what is it, the Streets of America or something. I don't know where it was.
Wow, I didn't hear about that.
So when people talk about their vacations, now I can talk about a vacation my wife and I took. Up north, we went to Yosemite. Then we went to Nevada City. We did some running around and this and that and the other. And I could, oh my gosh, it was fantastic. I can't wait to get back on the road. It was just incredible. Yeah, but the drive home was long, and we ended up having to take a detour because the freeway was the traffic was really heavy going up to Yosemite, and I mean I could find those points of the opposite of wonderful and good and fantastic, but. Again, we go back to perception, right? And we go back to the elements of de-stressing. And I'll use one example of that vacation my wife and I took back in 2016. We were going up to Yosemite. I stand corrected. We had just finished our trip in Yosemite, and we were heading for Nevada City. And we drove out, and we got to Highway, I think it was Highway 99, to go north. We got on the freeway. And it was just crawling along. And we were starting to get stressed. We were really relaxed before we got on the freeway. So we both said, next exit, get off. I recalibrated the GPS. And I said, I removed highways from the route list. And the next route we took wove us through the farm fields, the green pastures, and all of these other wonderful places with beautiful tree canopies and on and on and on. So we found a way to continue on our journey. We weren't rushed, and that was one of the rules, one of the two rules. We are not going to rush. The other one was we were only going to eat at diners and things of that nature. No fast food, and we stuck to that. So this leads us into this next area of dealing with stress. Do you find that people don't seem to understand how they got there and how to get out of that stressful place in their lives?
Well, I love the fact that you talked about this, the sound bites of life, because they really do determine what you see and what you don't see, and what we highlight, shed the light on. And you're absolutely right. They're in every instance, and none comes to my mind right now that's void of this. There is some level of stress, and not all stress is negative, but there is some level of stress that is there. And so that sneaky stress that lays in the background can be just as detrimental as the stress that's blaring in your face. And I do find that oftentimes people are unaware of how stressed they are. They do know that they are under stress, but they are unaware as to where it is and what to do, how to identify it. And it occurs even in my own life. When we start going at this, you know, moving at the sound of speed, as it were, trying to get everything done like the Energizer Bunny and allowing more and more things to pile on our plate, even if those things are things that we absolutely enjoy, we can find that we end up in this stress system without knowing how we got there. And that's why I encourage everyone to do what I call big three scans. And, you know, that I say that everything, every desire, every goal that I have in my life, that you have in your life, falls into one or three categories, and I call those categories the big three: health, wealth, and relationship. So we have these health, wealth, and relationship goals, and maybe not just for ourselves, but for our loved ones, family members, for our country sometimes. We just have these goals, and we can kind of, and dreams and aspirations, and we can find that they usually fit neatly in one of those categories. I have talked to people on occasion where they may span a couple categories, if not all three. But once I sit down, and I do this frequently all day long. Usually I can spot out stress in my life quickly, but sometimes I can't, and it's sneaky. So I do a big three scan. I'll start with my health, and I just scan my health category just quietly in my mind and think about, is there anything stressing me going on in my health? Because I may have thought about it. Something else rushed into my mind. I forgot about that. But back in the recesses of my mind, that thing is still bothering me. Yesterday, I had, give you an example. Yesterday, I had an earache in my left ear. I couldn't figure out what is going on, and it bothered me. Saying to myself, oh, I'm going to have to get a day off work, all this kind of stuff. But I went on throughout the day, and it really was just slight in my left ear. The nighttime rolls around. I do a big three scan. I remember, oh, yeah, you stuffed that down, and that stress about your ear is lurking somewhere. It allowed me then to shed the light of acknowledgement on it and awareness of it and kind of pinpoint, like, where did that come from? Well, I fell asleep listening to earphones, and I probably pressed a little bit too hard. That, do you know, that alleviated that stress. I had identified the source of it. No, it wasn't going to be anything major, and I needed to, you know, baby that ear a little bit, and it's fine today. If we don't identify stress, if we don't, it will sit there and it will grow. It will fester and it will pick up momentum. And before we know it, it will spiral into something really big. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. People are more stressed than what they know.
We're talking with Dr. Dravon James, and we're talking about the work that she has been doing for quite a number of years. She has a book available called Freedom is Your Birthright. I want to ask you, is this available on audio yet?
Not yet. And why don't I do that? You just spoke that into existence, because I want to do that. So I will look into that very, very promptly, because guess what? It's a tiny little book. It's less than 90 pages. It's a wonderful how-to book, how to experience freedom in every aspect of your life, the big three, health, wealth, and relationship.
Well, I only bring it up because it's what I do. I also produce audiobooks, so we can talk about that after the program.
Oh, wonderful.
All right. I want to let our listeners know, too, that they can spend every day, have everyday peace with Dr. Dravon James by going to drdravonjames.com, finding out more about her and the work that she is doing, get a copy of the book, and so forth, and we encourage you to do that. Stay with us. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Dravon James, and hope that you will stay with us here on Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
I welcome you back to Tell Me Your Story, along with Dr. Dravon James, and we're talking about the work that she does, the book she has, Freedom is Your Birthright. I have to say there's one element of that that, I mean, I certainly do agree with the phrase. I do indeed, Doctor, that, it is our birthright. We have that freedom and it's not just because it's in our Declaration of Independence where we have these inalienable rights, these supposedly God-given inalienable rights of life. Now, these are just three of them, folks. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life implies freedom, and as does liberty. But you don't get happiness. You have to search for it. You have to. You can pursue it. Whether you get it or not, I have a feeling it's not a question of whether you get it. It's whether you want it. If you really want happiness, and that's really kind of what we're talking about here, isn't it, Dr. Dravon?
Yeah. Happiness is a choice. And do you want it? And are you willing to pay the price for it? Because guess what? You pay the price for everything. There's a price attached to everything. So sometimes the price for happiness is being willing to accept change. That change, just the idea of change, is stressful for so many of us because we like consistency. We're humans. We like the sun to rise, the moon to rise. We want all of these things in place. We don't want anything going awry and something new coming up in our, most of us don't anyway. Mm-hmm. And that is stressful. But when we talk about being happy, it means that we've got to be in a perpetual state of accepting and embracing change.
You know, there's a paradox, however, because I hear, for example, when it's time for the economic news to come out, say at the end of a month, end of a quarter, end of the year, you know, they're always talking about all this stuff. And they make reference, and I have to tell you that it doesn't matter what decade it's been in. It doesn't matter who's been in the White House. It doesn't matter what financial institutions are in the news or religious organizations are in the news or what else is happening around the world. They always use this phrase when talking about the numbers, and they say, blah, 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 blah. And in these uncertain times, well, what times aren't? There is no certainty. Okay. And by the way, I'm going to start using this phrase from this point forward. I've already used it a few times in previous programs, but from this point forward, I'm going to share with you, Dr. Dravon James, and our listeners, if you haven't already heard it, there is one constant in the universe. There is one thing that you can count on, like, well, I was going to say like the five fingers on one hand, but there are those who have had construction worker injuries and don't have all five fingers. But it's the one thing that you can count on, like death and taxes, that will be there and it'll be your friend until the day you leave this earth. And that constant, you're not going to like it, is change. The only thing that will never change is that there is always change. And I use this beautiful example. I was 7 years old. I was sitting in Mass one Sunday morning, and I was musing about, and I was blinking my eyes and thinking, if I could blink my eyes twice real fast, they'd be identical. So I started playing with it. But as I did this, not only did my eyelids start to hurt, but I began to start thinking about the rest of the universe, both what was around me, but also cosmically. And it finally dawned on me that it was completely and utterly impossible. It would violate the laws of physics. The only way it could ever happen is if I could stop time. Because everything is in motion, out in the cosmos, as well as there in the church, as well as the cellular structure and so forth, and the movements in my body. I could never duplicate two blinks of an eye fast enough. It is not possible for them to be identical. And that's when, I'm not saying that that's when I clued into this constant in the universe is change. It's the only thing that doesn't change is change.
Right. And what's that? The first law of thermodynamics by Mayer, right, is energy is neither created nor destroyed. It is in constant motion. It simply changes forms, right? So everything is energy. We're energy. And energy is changing forms. That's what it does. Mm-hmm. That's what we do all day long. We go to sleep and our whole cellular body is changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everything is changed. But then we in the physical, we want to keep everything the same because there is something, and this points to an ego-controlled mind. Ego is threatened by change because the ego is always at war. It wants to know that it can win, and it can win, it believes, in systems that are constant when it masters something. And that's why shame is so prevalent, because it's, you know, should have already mastered everything, and the ego is threatened by the fact that, what do you mean? I don't know how to roller skate. What do you mean? You're changing my job. What do you mean? My marriage is going through changes. The ego figures, like, I got this worked out. I can win in this scenario, and now you want to change something, and it fights against it. It fights against it. And so this change threatens the ego, and it puts us in this place where we feel hostile. We don't, you know, because we if you think about it, if we hadn't changed, well, we wouldn't have the automobile. We wouldn't have the airplane. Change happens. We change the way we travel. We changed the way we communicate. I had my kids laughing when we were somewhere. I said, this is a payphone. And they were like, why would you ever use a payphone? Because believe it or not, there was not a cell phone. This is a pager, because that was a big thing when I was growing up. Somebody had a pager.
Yeah.
You know, I said, so we accept change on some levels, but even those things, the evolution of those things caused change in the industry, which had to change the way people worked, and that change was stressful for some people at some levels. All change is stressful when we're living an ego-controlled life. The whole kicker to this thing about stress and change is putting that ego under submission.
Now, let's talk about the word you just used, because in meditation, when I first started learning about it, and I've learned new things about it and have a different perspective, they tell you to quiet your mind, okay? And when I was first learning about this, maybe 30 years ago, and it was almost to the extent you want to shut it down. You want to pull the plug on your mind so that it won't interfere with your meditation. And as time went on, people began to elucidate a little bit more on that. And they would say, well, you don't want to really pull the plug on your mind, on your intellect, on, and I think maybe it would be rightly so to say, as you phrased it, your ego. What you want to do is you want to have your ego as your friend, and you want to tell your friend, look, I really would like to spend more time with you, but I also need to spend some time in this phase called meditation. So if we could come to an agreement that maybe you could just kind of move to the side a little bit or turn your volume down, maybe all the way, so that, and then in 20 or 30 minutes you can turn it back up again, and then we're going to go back to business. So they would talk about making friends with your mind, your ego, the monkey mind, the chatter, and so forth, and not making it an enemy. So when you use, what was the word you used? Take dominion.
Dominion of your ego.
Define that for me. Define that for me.
So, and you and I are so cued into each other right now, because this is what I will tell everyone in our listening audience, is that when you rise up to fight the ego, I guarantee you the ego will most likely win. It will give you a run for your money. The ego has the capacity, the intelligence of like a two-year-old. If you've ever seen a two-year-old throw a tantrum, the more the parent tries to settle that kid down in the middle of the grocery store, the bigger that explosion gets.
Oh, yeah.
That's not how we approach the ego. We do not approach that way. This is our two-year-old self. Lovable, but can be explosive. Mm-hmm. So in the two-year-old, and let me just say this, the ego is easily offended because it feels like, look, I'm here trying to help you. I spotted out danger. Someone's trying to win over top of us and make us losers, and I'm trying to keep you in the game. And now here you are, you want to step against me? I'm not going to have it. So that's the ego's whole perspective. It will turn on you. It'll turn on other people because it really just wants to win. It wants to be the last man standing, so to speak.
Yeah.
So how do we take dominion over the ego? The way we take dominion over everything, with love. And I'll tell you, I started off talking about how I do these big three scans. I scan my health category, my wealth category, my relationship category, and I'm looking to see if I can identify any stressors that are hiding in there. And one thing that can prevent me from doing that successfully is my ego, because my ego doesn't want me to be hurt. So it'll get in there and say, oh, you don't have time to do any big scan now, right now. We can't win there. The ego knows there's stress there. Let's go win somewhere else. And I start that conversation off with ego like this. How you doing? I'm getting ready to do something that may be a little bit scary for both of us. I'm going to look at my stress right now. And I know you're going to want to help me. And I literally say this to myself. If I'm alone, I'll say it out loud, because my ego can be very, very domineering. I know you're going to want to help me. But I want you to relax and let me take care of this for us. That's it. And then I proceed. And we're talking about meditation. I love that, because people try to meditate, and you find that the more you focus on quieting your mind, the louder your mind gets. because whatever we put energy on,
yeah,
right, tends to grow,
yeah,
right? So I had this little trick, and I don't need to use it so much now, but when I first started meditating years and years ago, I would send my mind on a journey, because the ego loves that, something that it can win back, you know, come back with it's like the cat that comes back with the mouse or something,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yeah.
It's something that it can win it. So I would sit down to meditate, my eyes closed, it's pitch dark, right? And I would send my mind in search of light. I just want you to see if you can find, my eyes are closed, I want to see if you can find any light in here. Is there any light in all this darkness? Well, my mind would have a field day with that. It's off and running. Like I had just pitched it a ball and it's a dog in a park. And it goes searching for light, and it leave me alone long enough for me to meditate. And then lo and behold, Lord, could you imagine? This is phenomenal. I encourage people to try this. It's an amazing feeling. Lo and behold, with your eyes closed, and you can call it a third eye experience. You can call it anything that you want. With your eyes closed, this light shows up right in the center of your forehead, because the ego will do its best to win at everything, including if it meaning that it needs to destroy you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you do that, and it really helps with your meditation. But, yeah, you can't fight the ego. Never approach it like you want to fight it. Always think of the ego as this two-year-old in the grocery store. You don't want to be in there yelling at this two-year-old with all the people around, because now we got a crowd, and it's really going to get really elevated to a level 10 really quickly in here. They're going to be soft, slow, loving, simple commands.
Mm.
But they got to be commands, because you are, I am, in control of the situation if I choose to be. We've been given dominion over everything. It's just how we exercise it. We don't need to exercise our dominion out of fear, anger, and hostility. That's saying I'm in charge, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Tell us about the philosophy you grew up with, how that's changed, and where you are today philosophically.
Oh, the philosophy. I have a wonderful mom, I tell you, because, and I didn't think it was so wonderful back then when I was a kid, but I grew up in a, what do they call, I would say metaphysical church, but New Age Truth, New Thought Church. And we went to a New Thought Church on Saturdays, and it was more like a lecture format, very, very organized. And then I grew up on Sundays going to what we call a holiness church. And that was all day on Sundays. So these two worlds, one very, very steeped in tradition with the Bible, and one New Thought and more free thinking, but very disciplined as well. My mom would make sure that the people at the New Thought Church never knew that we went to this Holiness Church, and people at the Holiness Church never knew that we spent all day long at a New Thought Church. And as I was growing up in this system, I just thought it was so bizarre, because I could see the similarities in the religions, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They were using different words, but underneath it, it was all the same. It was the pursuit of love.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were looking for, love and acceptance. And we can go back to what you said, you know, what are you afraid of? Love, acceptance, and safety.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to get that?
Yeah. There was a great book that I read years ago by Gerald Jampolsky called Love is Letting Go of Fear.
Love is Letting Go of Fear.
Yeah.
And it's the hardest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the Bible tells us so many times, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not,
mm-hmm.
right? Letting go of fear. Now, here is the thing that I used to ponder. If you want me to let go of fear, then why does fear exist? That used to just really bother me. Like, why give me something that I got to let go of? But if I can, I want to just speak to that for a quick moment,
please.
Because it's so important.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about religion, but I got to use the Bible as a universal source to give this example. In the Bible, back in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 through 28, you'll hear about this part of creation where it says that, let us make man in our image. Let us make man in our image. That is so soothing to me, because we make the assumption that, hey, this is God. And he said, let me make Drayvon in my image.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. And I look in the mirror and I see the image of Drayvon. And I said, well, is this the image of God? Because I look at your image or look at somebody else's image, and they're all different. So I know that this physical thing that I'm looking at in the mirror is not the image that God is talking about. Is an internal presence, which is sort of how you and I are communicating right now, because we're hitting on so many points that are aligned.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not communicating flesh to flesh.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the image that we're using.
Right.
We're using this internal image that is in the image of God. That's it says, God formed man from the dust of the earth, from the earth. Wow. Now, we're talking about a jello mold now, right? You got a mold, and you throw some dirt in there, a little bit of water, and then you mix that up, and you put that in that mold called Drayvon, and you got Drayvon. And then you put a mold for somebody else, you got this person. And you look around, and that's how I can account in my mind, very simplistic-like, that we have all these different physical frames.
Mm-hmm.
And the so it's two parts of Drayvon. It's the physical frame that gets fearful. It needs so much. It needs so much. And then there's the image of God. And when I communicate in that part of me, well, that's where my strength is. That's where I feel connected. That's where I feel love. That's where I feel safe. And in the words of Drayvon James, that's where I know I am at peace. I am peace, wholeness, completeness, nothing missing, nothing broken, totality. That image. The trick is this. I've got to keep reminding the flesh on a regular basis that, hey, Drayvon, you don't need to fear because you're not really flesh and bone. You're really made in the image of God. And that's the whole journey here, is to take dominion over this fleshly experience. Mm.
But when
it's
you
so
use
beautiful.
When you use the word dominion, however, and again, I was, of course, born and raised in the Roman Catholic Church, lived next door to a family of Mormons, which when I finally found out the relationship between the two, the way the Mormons thought of the Catholics, I thought, wow, we got along pretty good, in spite of the fact that the Mormons think that the Catholics are the whore of the earth, you know, which I thought was really funny because, you know, we didn't ever have any problems. Matter of fact, to the extent that I was so curious about it, I wanted to go to one of their Sunday worship services. I did. My mother found out and said, and now you're going to Mass, because going to Mormon church service on Sunday does not count, you know, kind of thing. And it wasn't that my parents were that strict about it, but it was just at that time, that's where we were. And I worked for a Christian station for 15 years, and I heard this word over and over again, dominion, 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 take dominion over the earth and take dominion over the animals and this and that and the other and the fishes and the birds and this and that and the trees and the land. And the interpretation, as I keep hearing it, even to this day, says that it's okay if we destroy it because we're just taking dominion. We're just doing what God has told us to do in the Old Testament. And I sit here and I go, you've got to be kidding me. Are you serious? God would tell you to destroy your home? Because that's what you're saying. Because this is where you live. This is your home. Maybe not the house you live in, but it's the planet you live on. And if you destroy it, where are you going to move to? Mars is quite a long ways off, both in terms of mileage, but also in terms of us actually going there. Maybe in the next 10 or 20 years, we ain't going. There is no lifeboat that's high atop a nuclear-powered rocket, as we see in the science fiction movies. It's not going to happen. But that's kind of the message I keep hearing from people. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
And there within is the limitations of words. Right, because each of us, we hear a word, and you know, even the word God can evoke some imagery for people that's so so painful and unpleasant.
Yeah.
So there's a limitation in words because for a lot of people, it's like you just said, dominion, meaning that I am this cruel king and ruler, and if it doesn't serve me, I'll wipe it out from here. Right, or it could mean I am responsible for you.
Yeah.
I have dominion over this situation. I am a caretaker for you,
mm-hmm.
right? I am responsible for you. For many years, I'm a practicing pharmacist. I've been so for 29 years, and I spent a lot of time working in elders situations where I was doing regulatory things for long-term care facilities and nursing homes and things of that nature. And someone has to have dominion over this, right? Someone's got to care for and be responsible for, right? And we would never think, well, dominion means that I'm coming in there
yeah.
and I'm wiping out everybody who can't take care of themselves. No, absolutely not. I am coming in just like God has dominion over us, over the earth, right? And I know some people automatically, when you say that, they have this negative imagery, you know, it says, well, if he does, then why is this happening and why is that happening?
Yeah.
Well, he has given it over to us. And if your version of dominion stems from a place of fear, then you believe to go and subdue the earth
mm-hmm.
means to kill it so it won't kill you. So you're living in what Einstein said as you have decided that you live in a hostile world.
Yeah,
that you don't live in a loving world. To live in a loving world means that, oh my gosh, I need to start a community garden. Mm-hmm. I need to do this. And my kids and I and my husband, last year we were in Paris, and there were some bees. We were eating at all these wonderful outdoor cafes. It was simply beautiful, but there were a lot of bees. And I was amazed, so was my family, that when we sat down to eat, never once did the waitress or the waiter or the hostess get a swatter out and try to swat the bee or get some spray out and try to kill the bee. In fact, we had a guy come over with two glasses and capture the bee in the glasses and then go out to the street and let the bee go.
There you go. Yeah.
So he had dominion over that situation. What are we, 3,000 times larger than a bee? Nothing for us to smash it to smithereens,
yeah.
Right? But his perception of dominion meant, I'm going to move it from here where these paying customers are trying to enjoy their brunch, and I'm going to put it back over here mm-hmm. where it can fly free and go pollinate and do what it needs to do for the universe. There are limitations to words, and those limitations have to do with our experiences, either conscious or subconscious experience, because we equate a picture with every word.
Yeah.
Everywhere we have a picture for. And for every picture, we have a feeling.
Yeah. I think that I would replace the word dominion with stewardship.
Stewardship.
Yeah.
Good choice.
I'm not saying that dominion is necessarily a bad word, but it just seems as though people do tend to misuse it. And again, they're coming from that place of fear. And stewardship implies basically the same kind of attitude, or a very, very complementary relationship between yourself and that which you are put steward over. Whether it's a family. I mean, for example, I think about this in terms of raising children. And first of all, I have none. I don't have any kids, so I don't have the experiences that you do. My parents raised six of us, so they went through all of the two-year-old levels of us as well. But I know that there are some who, and I don't want to refer to having children and offspring as pets necessarily, but the closest comparison I have is having animals. And we have a dog. We've had a number of dogs. And one of the things that I learned early on, because I never had a lot of dogs, I didn't have any dogs as pets as a kid growing up. My dad just didn't want them. But as I have learned, you do not get the dog to behave the way you want it to. You try to understand why the dog is behaving the way that he or she is, so that you can then begin the process of training the dog to have appropriate behavior in different settings, socialized, if you will. And in a manner of speaking, children are the same way. Although, again, as you say, you have that two-year-old just going berserk in the grocery store, and like you say, you don't want to start screaming at the kid who's screaming too, because then the volume rises and you've got all kinds of fun other after effects. Why is the kid upset? I have to say, I'm going to take this to another level as far as adults. 9/11. Many, many thoughts went through my mind the morning I'm watching television. But one of them that has still never been answered to my satisfaction is, has anybody talked to any of these people we claim did this and find out why they're so pissed off? Has anybody talked to them, sat down and say, I'm not saying that we're going to change our lifestyle or anything, but can you tell us what's going on? Why? What is it that you, going back to that question, what are you so afraid of? And as far as I know, no one's ever asked that question. No one has posed that question.
And which is what we started off at the beginning of this conversation.
Yeah.
Those three things. I forgive myself. I forgive you. And asking the heartfelt, compassionate question, what are you so afraid of?
Yeah.
What are you so afraid of?
Yeah.
Because if I can get you, and maybe I can't change what happened in the past that made you afraid. And in fact, maybe that thing that happened was so horrific. But what I can do is help you to see that something came out of that, if not anything more than the fact that you realized that. Mm-hmm. As scary and as harmful as that was, it did not destroy you.
Yeah.
You are still here. You have the opportunity you had, and here's that horrible word, though, but you took dominion over that outcome, and you're still here. Now, let's use a software. Let's be a steward over today.
Mm-hmm.
Over today. Let's realize that, yeah, you got that haunting memory. You do. But let's look for some gratitude in there. We may have to dig really deep, but let's look for some gratitude in there, and it'll soften up your experience, and it will release you from the crippling grip of fear, because fear makes us respond in irrational manners. It's just, we sit back, if we had a bucket of popcorn and sat back and watch what a life on fear does, it'd be amusing, except for we'd see us on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Say, oh my goodness, did I say that? Oh my goodness, did I do that? You know,
did I say that out loud?
right. Oh, and here's the thing: some of the stuff we say that we don't say out loud is even worse.
Oh yeah.
You know, we're killing ourselves.
Yeah.
We make ourselves a toxic dump.
Yeah. Yeah.
For fear just to spew all over us.
Yeah. I first of all, I want to let our listeners know, if you have not been to drdravonjames.com, a number of things. Number one, you're missing out on, of course, her work and the work she's doing, especially through the book Freedom is Your Birthright. Number two, this woman has a smile from ear to ear. And it takes me into a realm, dovetailing off what you just said, what we've been talking about here. And I want to go here, on the part of me says, I want to go here delicately, but at the same time, I definitely want to go here. You've got this infectious smile and energy. Now, you talk about fear, all right? We've been talking about fear and this whole aspect thereof. You are not just a woman, you're a black woman, right?
I am indeed.
And I've been watching the news, trying not to very much, but I have seen the stories. I've heard about the various groups that are out there that are upset over the way that minorities, blacks and Hispanics and people of color, I guess is the term, but blacks in particular. And one of the things that I've noticed when I get in conversations with some people is I sense this chip on their shoulder. You know, almost as if they're just waiting for the other shoe to drop and bam, the hammer comes down. I don't hear that in your voice as a black woman, a woman of color who has a family. And you live what? You live in Florida?
Baltimore,
Maryland. So you're right there on the East Coast. And I would like to go here because I think that on the one hand, I hear the chip on the shoulder of a lot of people. And again, this is people I see in the news. So I take that with a grain of salt. OK, they're looking for ratings and that kind of stuff, who have a chip on their shoulder. And of course, they're talking, for example, about reparations for the ancestors of slaves. And then I hear another interview with another black person who is talking about. And by the way, I'm so confused as to what term to use, colored, black, African-American. Oh, it drives me crazy after a while. I just want to call you Dr. Dravon James is what I want to do. And they go off on the whole thing of how their children are being shot in the streets by the police and so forth. And I have no clue as to what that's like. I can't imagine the fear there. But I'm curious as to whether or not, A, you have had any of these kinds of thoughts, at least as far as our conversation has gone thus far, this far, as well as back in December of 2018, I would venture you haven't thought much about it. In other words, it's not on your mind kind of stuff, just from your demeanor. But how you have dealt with these subjects with people around you.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept because, you know, and as I said a few minutes ago, the image that I choose to connect with is that story from Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, which says, "I am, let us make man, let us make Dravon in our image, in the image of God made he Drayvon. So I connect with that, and it is because of that I see one people. Whether I don't care whether you identify as, the universe, you identify as somebody who worships God or somebody who worships the universe, or, I don't care what you call the supreme being, but I know that we are cut from the same cloth. Then I have a healthy respect for the fact that there were some molds laid out, some jello molds, and different people were formed in these different molds for variety's sake. And we like variety, at least I do. I like variety because it's a spice of life. But because of this ego and fear factor, and I'm raising a 16-year-old boy and a 19-year-old just finished a first year in college, and they have to navigate these Americas like I did. You know, they have to navigate living in the skin that they that their image lives in. And there are some practical things to this, to approach everything with love, because the energy that you give out is the energy that you will receive. No matter what your political stance is, no matter what you want to get in this physical world, they're really, this is where things really are black and white. You have two types of energy that you can give, love and hatred. There's two types. And I know we like to say, oh, there's this gray area, but there really isn't.
Yeah.
There really isn't. And no, we're not all loving all the time, because in the best of us, there's some really bad stuff. And in the worst of us, there's some really loving stuff. Right? So we get to choose. But choose love as frequently and as often as possible. And you will attract in your life, in your experience, love. There are going to be some things that happen that don't seem lovely. But I guarantee you, you will shorten your stay there and your exposure to that unloveliness if you really approach everything with love. Work really hard to see the other guy's perspective on things. Work really, really hard to do that, because it is in our selfishness we can only see, gosh, I'm so angry. Gosh, I've been so hurt. And I'm not taking anything from anybody's struggle, because a lot of people have been really hurt and they've got a lot of things to be angry about. But anger kills. Realizing that the person who hurt you, they were sick. They were sick. They wouldn't have hurt you. You're an awesome person. They could have never done that to you if they felt well. And they may have been feeling bad for years. Could happen. You know, and it was a sickness that may have run through their whole family. It was contagious. Right? But when you approach life that way, it gives you a gentleness and a loving energy that it helps you to see the other person's perspective, and things don't weigh on you so heavily. You're easy to forgive. You're like, okay, not, you know, it's not great. Wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but I can get past that because I can see the big picture.
A very strong example of the law of attraction.
Yeah.
I thank you for addressing that, because it's sort of weighed on me a little bit, you know, and we have, when I walk up and down our main street, which is called State Street, you know, our population is rather diverse, but every time I walk past a person of color, you know, I sometimes wonder what's on their mind right now in terms of, you know, their place in our society, their place in the universe, that kind of thing. You know, and I just want to welcome them and say, hey, you're just as welcome here as I am. You know, we're equal. I remember going through the grocery store the other day, and this woman came flying out of an aisle and shot on past me. And I said, and I did say this out loud, I said, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were so much more important than me. I beg your pardon. To which she said, as she was going down the other aisle, oh, yes. And it's like, wow, you know, okay, fine. You know, one other thing I'm going to add to what you just said about being created in the image and in the likeness of God. In the New Testament, Jesus is quoted as saying, be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And for the longest time, and this was when I was working for the religious station, I pondered that, trying to figure out, what does that mean? Be perfect. You know, and of course, many times it's interpreted as behave yourself, don't sin. And I thought about that. I said, wait a minute, hold on a second. God doesn't sin, okay? God is God. So be perfect even as your Father in heaven is perfect. I thought, okay, well, it's not right or wrong, good or bad, black or white, up or down. And in the Old Testament, I think it's in Psalms, it refers to, you know, God is saying, I am that I am. I am the great I am, as it were. I thought, okay, well, let's put all that together. So what it's telling me is not only were we created in the image and likeness of God, but by virtue of being who we are, we're perfect. Because that's what God is. He just is. So just be. And now you're perfect.
Yes, you. Right. Just you. That inner you. And identify with that. And not the Jell-O mold.
Yes, correct.
You know,
correct.
The Jell-O mold helps us to maneuver on this planet Earth, and it's great. We love it. We don't want to get out of this Jell-O mold anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
But identify with that part of you, which is perfect, which is in the image of God.
It's very exciting. It really is. When you start pondering these things and you begin to realize. And then there's one other element I want to throw in, and I really found this fascinating. And again, this is, I say this way because I think it's just, it helps to clarify that if you do believe in this particular aspect of the philosophy, that the Christ was sacrificed for those who were created, going back to these passages, in the image and likeness of God, created perfect, okay? And the sacrifice was made for those beings. So what that says is that if we had no value to the Creator, there never would have been the sacrifice in this particular paradigm.
Right.
So that means that before the sacrifice, we were priceless.
That for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son.
That's right.
For you.
That's right. And so after the sacrifice, you're even more priceless.
Yep.
And
I paid for it heavily.
Yeah. I have the receipt.
Right.
And I'm not returning it. I'm sorry. I'm not returning it.
Yeah.
Even for green stamps. And if you don't know what those are, Google it.
I remember green stamps.
Yeah. But it's just so interesting how, and I run across this, and I really do my best to be careful for myself, but I hear so many people who are so, I love this word, I don't like that people use it, but I love this word, are so self-deprecating. They're always putting themselves down, and sometimes it's in such subtle ways, even to this extent. And this is how subtle it can be. I remember talking with someone about this. How when you are, let's say you had a great meal. You had a meal, and it was really tasty. Are you going to say, that was really good, or that's not bad? And it could say, okay, are you a half full or half empty glass person?
Right. It's, oh my gosh, the importance of words, right? That was really good.
Yeah.
Let your whole being experience this. That, and lean into that.
Yeah.
Accept that. But we're so braced because we feel like, well, you know, can't be that good. Something bad is coming around the corner.
Murphy's Law, the other shoe's going to drop.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to get too happy about this because, you know, and so, but no, go ahead. Lean into that. Experience it in every core of your body. That was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I do the same thing with my wife when she cooks it. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether she's made a meal from scratch or it's a bunch of leftovers. You know, I try to remember to say that was really good. And 99 times out of 100, it is really good, even when she starts to get real creative with the leftovers and so forth. And then sometimes I'll hear her say, well, yeah, that wasn't bad, you know. And I don't sit there and get into whole philosophical discussion about the power of words with her. You know, I just let her use the words that she wants, because that's at that moment. You know, that's where she is. It's like you said before, you know, when you come across someone today, you may say this phrase to them, blah, 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 and hey, da, 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 and then tomorrow you say the same phrase, blah, 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 bl because they've had life experiences from the time you saw them yesterday until the time you saw them today that are affecting their personality, their outward expression. And I think that again, we need to cut each other a little slack in that regard. Now, here's another element, too, that you might add. And that is that when we are, and this has always been a hard one for me. I was talking about this with someone yesterday. When you see somebody out there, you know, like I used to have a really hard time with getting upset with people when driving in the city. You know, doing stupid stuff, cutting me off and what have you. And I would, at the most, I would honk my horn. But I would get upset. And someone said to me the other day, in terms of the whole metaphysical aspect of us and our interconnectedness, they told me, says, that was you. Okay? That was you. Every person out there is a reflection of you. Okay? And I think it goes to what you said earlier about the energy we put out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It absolutely does.
Yeah.
Because we only attract different parts of ourselves. That's it.
Yeah. Dr. Dravon, go ahead. Continue. Go ahead.
No. I'm just so excited because look what you and I have attracted today.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes.
It is very exciting.
Okay. This is really good.
Ordinarily, I'd say, calm down. Don't calm down. Do not. Keep it going.
This is really good.
Yeah, it really is. And I am very excited about making it available to folks and having it there for people to listen to learn more from, as well as to go to your website, drdravonjames.com. Dr. Dravon James, I want to thank you so much for joining us here for, I want to call it part two of what I hope will be many parts down the road of conversations we will have for our listeners. And we do encourage people to contact you and find out more about you, as well as Freedom is Your Birthright. That's the title of her little book there that you can pick up a copy of. And hopefully one day soon, it will be available in Audible format for you to listen to. And so we encourage you to go to her website and find out more about that. And you have, do you do individual types of counseling and or coaching for folks?
I don't. My business is, so if you're looking for a motivational, inspirational speaker or keynote speaker is what I do.
Okay.
So I do workshops. I'm workshopping. My gosh, I'm booked for the month of July and part of August with the Unity Church, several of them. And,
yeah. And of course, you're still in the pharmaceutical industry?
I do, yes.
So if you're looking for pills, call her. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that. Don't even do that.
Call me for your inspirational speaking needs, keynote speaking needs. You can visit my website and see more about that. And, of course, check me out on Facebook and Instagram at Everyday Peace with Dr. Dravon James.
And by the way, maybe on the pill mode level, she'll send you placebos. And I've watched a 60 Minutes piece where placebos do work, folks. They do. I remember they were doing this study. They had, I guess, maybe it was three groups. And one of the groups, they gave placebos. But here's the weird thing. You know, normally you wouldn't tell that group that they were getting a placebo. They told that group they were getting a placebo, and the people were actually experiencing benefits from it. Isn't that wild? Isn't that
even after being disclosed?
Even after being disclosed, they chose to believe that it would help them. And it did. Yeah. So the power of the mind is extraordinary. And we are encouraged by the power of your mind, Dr. Dravon James. Thank you so much for joining us. And I hope that one day you find your way all the way across the country to the West Coast. Maybe you can visit Disneyland here. And while you're here, maybe we can get together in studio to continue our conversation. But regardless, we will continue this conversation.
Yes, we will. I'd love to get all the way across the world.
It does feel like that sometimes, doesn't it?
Right.
Before we let you go, and I probably asked you these questions the last time you were on the program, but for those who have not listened to that interview, I'd like to ask you again. And who knows, maybe the answers are a little different, and that is just fine. The three questions that I ask my guests, and the first one is, who is Drayvon James?
Drayvon James is a being on the planet Earth who has one purpose, to teach people how to take everything that shows up in their life, the good, the bad, and the in-between, to create and build the life of their dreams. That's who she is, a human being with that goal.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
What I hope and want to achieve with the work that I'm doing now is to help people feel their true power to move and live and operate in the truth of who they are. And the truth is, they are peace. Nothing missing, nothing broken. Wholeness, completeness, totality.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Oh, my life's purpose, I believe and I feel in my core, is to spread the message of the powerful energy of peace that each and every one of us is. Mm.
Dr. Drayvon James, again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program, and we do look forward to having you back again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you. I love to be back.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.